Alright. Good morning, everybody. I'll call order the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting for this Tuesday, October 30th, 2018, and ask if everybody please join the board as we honor America with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Well, thank you and good morning. So a lot happened on our agenda today, not in terms of numbers of items, but the items that we're covering are really substantial. So let's get right to it. First item, as always, is public comment number one. This is an opportunity for members of the public to address topics on today's agenda or really anything you'd like to address. Come right on up to the microphone, anybody wishing to do so. And seeing no one moving the microphone, we'll move on to Ames Economic Development Commission quarterly report. Looks like we've got Dan Colhane and Brenda Dreyer.
Good morning. My good friend Leanne headed this direction. I'm sure to pull up our presentation. So I'm gonna lead off efforts, and then we'll bring up Dustin to talk about economic development services. Dan, any opening comments?
No, we're glad to be here. Thank you for some time this morning.
So let's start out our comments talking about giving you really an update on where we're at with our workforce solution activities, really ending September 30th, but kind of some current information on unemployment and those sorts of things. So in terms of unemployment, last week we received the September numbers. We are down to 1.4%, actually a little less than maybe I even thought it was going to be. Again, the important thing to do is really to look at where we were a year ago. And a year ago, we were probably sitting in this seat talking about how low 1.9% was. So realize it's very low, and as you look in general, over the last 12 months, we've added 900 jobs in Story County, and so.
Brenda's still the lowest MSA in America.
Still lowest MSA.
And so that's metropolitan statistical area that includes all of Story County and some areas even beyond Story County and Boone County. But there's 300 and some odd MSAs in America. Yep. Is that right? And Ames is the lowest, and again including all of Story County.
Yep. So I don't anticipate a whole lot of change between now and the end of the year. Might dip a little lower as we enter into November and December, but should end the year probably the lowest again. And
put the 900 jobs in 1 year. So these are private sector jobs mm-hmm. that we're talking about?
Yeah, there is, because there's really not been any real gain in the public sector. So
put that in context. How does that compare? So, well, I'd say pretty regularly. From 2000 to 2010, the entire decade, we added 500 private sector jobs. But how does the 900 compare to the last couple of years? Similar or more?
I'll need to defer to Dan on that question.
Well, we're up over 7,000 jobs since that time. So year to year, it's really varied. But, yeah, it continues to grow.
Super.
And, you know, some of those years would have been during times when Iowa State was growing. So we would have had years where there were a higher number of public sector jobs created, but the real message here is there's lots to celebrate in terms of continued low unemployment, strong job growth from where we're at.
Well, it makes our job board and our workforce develop, which I'm sure you're getting ready to get.
I am. Let's talk about the job board. So remember, an important initiative to all of us is Story County Job Board. It's called Working Ames, but we really highlight that it's a gateway to jobs in Story County. So as we look at some of those key statistics for our job board, year to date we ended the end of September with 88,201. It's a standalone site, so those are searches directly on that site. If you look at our digital media, Facebook likes, 1,200. Twitter impressions for the month of September were 4,500. We have 647 registered job seekers that have created profiles on Working Ames. We have 302 employers that are registered users on the site. And if you do a search there today, there's over 1,700 jobs posted.
Can you feel at all anecdotally, Brenda, of the 1,700 jobs, what kind of pay range we're talking about? Is that lower end of the pay scale? Where's that?
So, to be honest with you, a lot of the positions that end up on Working Eames are really positions that are full-time employment opportunities. So they are, but they're all levels of opportunities. So there might be positions at Mainstream Living posted. Today there was a position posted for Story Construction. There's positions posted for the county. We don't see a lot of hourly part-time positions posted on Working Eames. And really, I always say those folks are recruiting with flags outside their businesses on Duff. But so really, we have a lot of full-time opportunities out there. And that's really, I think, part of our challenge and part of our discussion is we know we're not naive enough to say that everybody in Story County is thriving. We have a lot of underemployment that needs to be addressed, and a lot of our strategies relate to upskilling, creating training opportunities, doing a better job getting the message out to the fact that there are great jobs and that there are full-time opportunities. So that's a part of our focused efforts to figure out who we're not talking to that we need to be talking to. And again, I'd encourage the three of you and everybody in the audience too, you know of folks that are working part-time, and getting them to work in Eames so they can see the number of full-time opportunities that are there. I know a full-time opportunity doesn't work for everybody, but it would be great if we could start connecting folks to jobs where they could count on the hours that they're working, get a benefit plan to support their family's health care. But again, that's, I think, the challenge that we all need to work on, and getting that message out to people that may be struggling in our communities. In terms of career fairs, this is one of the ways we try to get our message out. We've been working with the team over in Marshalltown at their Iowa Works office. We had great participation from Story County employees in a September event. And while the traffic was a little lighter than we expected, our employers would tell you that they had great conversation with some very good candidates. So sometimes you need to pick quality over quantity, even though I'm a numbers person and wish we'd see more people. We are going to plan another event with those folks on February 20th, and we are promoting that to our employers. Iowa Works, just a reminder to everybody, we were thrilled to have an Iowa Works office now in Eames and Story County. I tell our employers and I tell everybody I can tell is please use that office, because if we don't utilize that, it would be subject for closure again. And so we need to utilize the staffing support that's there, be good stewards of our state's investment to put that facility in Eames and Story County. We're working with that team to try to get in an event before the end of the year, kind of a push for the start of the year, either the first or the second week of December. We are wrapping up a few virtual career fairs yet this year. And again, remember, this is to really reach beyond our borders and build a national awareness of job opportunities that we have available. So we've wrapped up a nursing career fair. Actually, on Thursday, I'll be doing a Hiring Our Heroes event. So again, we've got a great program to support veterans relocation into Story County. That is an easy thing to talk about in this career fair. So that'll be on Thursday. And then later in November, we're actually doing an event focused at college athletes. So I feel like we've got a pretty good pulse, don't we, former college athlete? in terms of what those people need, in terms of trying to adapt, they don't often have the time to go out and do formal job searches. So it'll be a great group. I feel like a lot of them will know where we're located. We'll lead with, home to Iowa State University. So very excited about the opportunity to participate in that event. And then, like I said, that'll bring to closure our virtual events for the year. But that really allows us to build quite a prospect list that we can continue to market to in terms of continuing to push out work in Eames and the opportunity to come live here and work. So the Eames High event, I thought you would appreciate this number. The county was a great participant in this event, and I was so excited about the different opportunities where our students had a chance to visit with the elected officials, with the county staff, to stop by the booth. It was a great awareness, and you were strong supporters on a number of fronts. But we had 1,450 students go through that event, 135 breakouts. That was a monster amount of activities to break out and schedule. 55 exhibitors, and again, thank you for that. And there's the new office number or address for Iowa Works as well. In terms of Home Base Iowa, this is a strong partnership we have with the county. We refocused our efforts a year ago. We've had 178 resumes matched to the county. We send introduction emails. We drop them a personal note from our offices. The county follows up with a personal note. We follow up with our relocation videos and another email. We send them the relocation guide. And we have the number of Story County home-based Iowa employers has grown by about 20 this year alone. So we're excited about those efforts, and we've had a few successes in bringing folks here. In terms of K-12 engagement, here's the numbers for fall. 13 students, 8 school districts for SCALE. And again, every school district within the county is involved in SCALE. It may not be a large number, but they're involved. We're offering 2 tracks this semester, engineering and business communications. In terms of the AIMS programs for Business Engagement Collaborative, we have 13 students there, and actually they're meeting in our garden level for the next 2 years. The bottom picture is them actually pitching to us how they want to glam up our space for their office for the next 2 years. And so the school district is actually going to be partnering with us to equip that space for those students this year and into next. And the other thing I wanted to visit a little bit about was we worked really hard with our partners at DMAC to really put together some upskill training. Quite frankly, we've struggled getting participants to sometimes sign up for those opportunities, and we've ended up canceling them. I'm thrilled to announce that last week we were able to start an industrial maintenance technician training class. We went to our local manufacturers. Each of them brought forward potential people that could be upskilled. It was free to the participants, free to the company. Some of them decided to pay their folks while they were attending the classes at night. We've taken care of books and materials. DMAC has pulled out all the punches and all the different funding pots they have available to make this opportunity available. It's going to run for 20 weeks, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, and we're very excited. There were 15 people at the actual information meeting. I think we're going to end up with around 12. So more importantly, if we can get this done, we'll have a story to tell for other folks that might be interested in those opportunities. And finally, we have just recently joined the Technology Association of Iowa in being a sponsor for the Iowan Project. So we hear from a number of our industries the challenges in recruiting a technical workforce, a very skilled IT workforce, and a partnership with this organization will allow us access to people that have indicated an interest in our companies, knowing more. They're located all over the country, but have ties to Iowa. So stay posted. Like I said, in the last few weeks, we've just inked that deal and are very excited about what that's going to mean in terms of a partnership specifically supporting our companies that are needing that skilled IT resource. And with that, I'll let Dustin.
Before you go, questions for Brenda regarding workforce, part of your report.
On a small scale, and I use the word scale loosely in the sense that it was nice to start the economic development meeting we had last week that we had 2 communities of these kids. You know, people look at what the scale project is and what do they do. Zerion and Colo are having their websites redone by high school students because that is how they greet the world in a lot of ways. And we have these technology proficient teenagers, and we give them this task. Collins is right there wondering why they, you know, when they can get in on this one. But the thing is, this is how we turn a program into a tangible. And you will see here in the next several months' time 2 much better and more user-friendly websites for the community and the county.
So again, this is really the charge of all of us, is that, you know, our office may facilitate these initiatives, but these are really all of our initiatives. So a part of our jobs is to connect to our businesses, connect to our communities. If there's any of these services that we can be better utilizing and pushing out beyond what we're doing today.
During the transition, I'd also offer that at the same time, there's an evolution to our programming for workforce. We're really trying to listen to our partners, not only our funders, but also a lot of our companies that may not be providing a source of revenue to this at this point in time. So we're continuing to listen to the experts that are in HR, because hands down, this is our biggest issue. You know, I often talk to groups around the county, and I say, at one level or another, there will always be pretty good job creation and churn in Ames and Story County. We just need more people to stay. And again, we're doing this diversity on this symposium on building inclusive organizations tomorrow. It's a pretty cool deal. We got a nice agenda. Got a couple hundred people coming to the Gateway Hotel in Ames for what we hope is the first of many programs like this. But we have to work hard to make sure that our companies understand inclusivity and diversity, so that no matter where you're from or your lifestyle, you can take a job in Story County and be successful, and you can thrive. And so that's the purpose of that. That's the purpose of the workforce program, because we are number one, and it's great, and it's also a bummer, as we all know. And you know, another 900 jobs this past year. I look on the wall behind you there. That's a great looking plaque, by the way. But those three companies alone, you think about the job creation there. You think of the job creation right here in Nevada, with Mid-States growing, with Burke's announcement here in the last 45 days is monumental. I mean, that's a career for some city administrators. I told Matt Morrison, that's a career project for you. I said, well, hopefully you'll have more. The point is that we're going to continue to see things like that. We know that, I'll use Hawk as an example. They've added almost 100 people this year without telling anybody about it. But their growth is so rapid, they're adding people. They're adding people in an unemployment environment of 1.4%. So it's harder and it takes longer. And so that's why the investment you make in our efforts is so important, and all the companies that invest that at the same time is so important. And the work that Brenda's doing is so critical, because we're not sitting here this morning thinking we've got all the answers, because we don't. But we sure are trying hard to find those. So thank you.
Absolutely. And just to underscore, you know, workforce is an issue. But what a great issue to have, because it's an indicator of how positive things are, right? And so we just got to keep wrestling with it. Brenda, thank you for your work. And I've said many times, this is all hands on deck. This is all of us pulling in every direction that we can find. Thanks for you guys' leadership on it. All right. So now we're going to talk about economic development. Dustin, welcome.
Thank you. So good morning to you all. With all the activity in Story County, it's hard to believe that this is my first quarterly report to you all. So just to start out, I'd like to thank you for your support. When I go about implementing this contract, I'm constantly thinking about how intentionally broad it seems, and that's really critical if we're going to have the type of holistic community and economic development that is critical for rural renewal and revitalization. So just to start out here, I'm going to go with a metric or a set of metrics that Brenda has used many times, so this is probably familiar to you. And the main thing that you should take away from this is that even though there's a transition period in our office where Brenda was phasing out of this role and I was phasing in, we haven't slumped at all with our level of commitment and engagement to our rural communities. And I would say, in fact, the community contacts row there, that's a conservative estimate for the number of contacts and communications that we've had with folks in these 11 communities and throughout unincorporated Story County. 109, that would include things like phone calls and emails about specific conversations, as well as face-to-face visits. You can see the year-to-date as well as the quarterly figures. I included that separation just so you know that given the quarter starting, given the transition started with a new quarter, you can kind of see how that pairs up with our progress so far. Obviously, project development meetings, that's on par as well with what we've seen year to date and all the others too.
Dustin, before you go on, just we got quite a few people in the audience who may not be familiar with what this is or where it came from. And so Dan and I might be the right people to talk about this. So it's either 5 or 6 years ago, Dan? Is that right? That
yes.
5 or 6 years ago, the county entered into a contract with the ADC to provide economic development services throughout the county. When we entered into that contract, it was with the entire ADC, but there has typically been a point person within the ADC that has taken on this responsibility. We started with Drew Camp, who did an exceptional job, and now has moved on to other responsibilities. Then Brenda Dreyer came in, again, did an exceptional job, and now has taken on other responsibilities. And now we have Dustin, who is starting out doing a phenomenal job. We're excited about the future. But the primary responsibility of this contract is to make sure that we have professional economic development help for our smallest communities in our rural areas.
Oh.
And don't leave them over there.
Pretty proud of myself.
What was Fred Sanford's wife's name? Come amazing.
Where were you?
Yeah, I was just saying the responsibility is to get out and offer professional economic development services to our smallest communities that couldn't otherwise reasonably afford to be able to do them. And so that's what this conversation is about for anybody who's not aware. Didn't mean to interrupt.
Well, and I would just add briefly that in economic development, 5 or 6 years ago when we put the contract together initially, was about the most traditional sense of economic development. And there's been an evolution to that as well in terms of economic development is different in every community. It depends on their needs and their infrastructure, primarily on needs. And so our team has worked on a wide variety of things and a wide variety of programs that could help those communities with things too. And so that's been important. We've had the right people, though, doing that work. You know, Brenda really brought a sense of very rural community development to the table, and that's really, really opened our eyes, I think, as an organization to different ways we can be helpful.
Well, I just want to underscore that because I think that is right on, Dan, and I hadn't really considered it. But instead of, so it was originally conceived as an economic development service to these communities, and what it's absolutely become is community development to all these communities. So important, and we're seeing so many great successes that are because of a lot of different factors going into these successes. But one of the key ones is the service that you guys are providing and the fact that you're there to provide the foundational work necessary for some of these communities to do some really cool things in their, on their main streets and in their towns.
Agreed.
That's actually a great segue to the next section here on downtown development. And so, like we're talking about, rural realities are different than urban realities. And so, when you think about downtown development in a place like Ames, for instance, there's a potential for churn and development. There's high utilization of buildings. But in our rural communities, that's not often the case. And so, it's important that we're preserving our built and our cultural assets downtown. But those things contribute to the sense of place of those communities and the rural character, which is really important for local pride, and it spurs economic and community development. And so, one thing that we've been working on lately is the community Catalyst Grant. You're probably familiar with this from the previous funding cycle with Ziering, but the IDA, Iowa Economic Development Authority, has increased that pool of funding to $3 million this year. Some of that's going to be reserved for emergency situations like what we've seen in Marshalltown, but a big chunk of that's going to go toward rural communities of under 1,500 and fewer people. And so there's a good chance that our rural communities can take advantage of this. And it's not, I've even asked this question to the folks at the Downtown Resource Center. It's not, they're not aiming to have a distributive effect, right? So you can have 3 or 4 projects in different communities in Story County. And if those are great projects and they meet the criteria on the scoring list, then those can proceed as well. So right now, this week, actually, we're going to submit the Catalyst pre-app for the city of Cambridge. We're going to work with them on that. And that deadline is November 14th. That'll open up the window possibly for an invitation to a full application, and that's on December 14th. So again, that's $100,000 for a grant. It's matching. However, those matching funds can come through in-kind donations. Collins also hosted that open house. I think many of you have toured. All of you are familiar with it. For a town of its size, it's such an impressive facility to have those types of amenities. And they actually attract people from outside of Collins itself, over 80 memberships and high utilization there.
Right.
Ziering's also making progress on its historic preservation project in downtown. You're familiar with that, so I won't go too much into it, but I'll add that Hanson Family Hospital's clinic, that was slated for November 1st here, but they're actually going to push it back. They're having some issues and technical difficulties in the office, but that's on the way. McCallsburg is working on adding amenities to its local park, And even though that's a community development initiative, it's kind of a quality of life initiative, that's important if we're going to attract those people to live in the communities, especially as we have the growth that we just talked about earlier. Mm-hmm. And places are looking for, you know, to house workforce and to attract those people to live in their towns. And finally, Slater's working with a company, and we're working with a consultant with that company on a project that will help their downtown out, and we'll put a business into one of their retail spaces. So moving to industrial development, in Roland, several years ago, they adopted the International Code for Buildings, that's the 2015 code, and they didn't really look at all the provisions. They adopted the lump sum of documents. So we're looking at evaluating those codes to see if they're appropriate for their community and whether or not they're hindering development. Of course, we want safe buildings. We want them to construction to comply with all the codes that are necessary. We just want to make sure that we're having the development and achieving the potential that Roland has. We see continued progress on Larson Drilling site, so that's in their industrial park, and also working every month with the REDC, the Roland Area Development Corporation, on projects to help out their industrial development efforts as well as their housing development efforts. I got to mention Collins. Just outside of Collins, the Landis facility is now open, and that, to my knowledge, is the fastest receiving and storage facility in Landis' entire company. So that's a $14 million investment just outside of the city there. And then just as I mentioned, those companies like Burke, EV, and 3M, you know, the people that work at those companies, they're going to live in some of these communities. And in fact, they already do. And in McCallsburg and Roland, there are people that work at EV. And so we're going to see an expansion of that, and we need to be cognizant of how it's going to affect our communities and put a knee on them for more housing development and so forth. Mm-hmm. So community development. We talked about this before, but Roland's Pool Committee, they're continuing to proceed on looking at bids. They're trying to cut down that cost a bit just to make it more palatable for their community. And then even though I talked about downtown, I consider housing a real community development initiative as well. And we're seeing units in downtown buildings, or at least plans to revitalize these buildings to include downtown units. And when you're talking one or two or three units for Ames or Huxley or Story City, that may not be a ton. But for a place like Cambridge or Collins or Zering, that's a significant chunk of that housing. And so we have to keep an eye on that. And it's great that they're proceeding with it. The Catalyst Grant, by the way, is leading the way, is making that possible for those communities. I got to mention also Nyland Corner. They're looking for someone to operate that business. That's a huge historic asset for that community and for the county as well. Even though some of us might, you know, bypass it or drive by and not think anything, it's a huge part of the culture there. So we're looking for someone to operate that business. I've reached out to a few leads and people that I know who work on similar projects with highway associations. So we're just going to look for someone to fill that role by the end of the year, hopefully. And then Collins is planning to create a mural of a historic photograph in its downtown. They actually just received funding at our previous Story County Economic Development Group meeting. Basically, in the Great Depression, a photographer hired by the government came to Collins and snapped some photographs, and they have one of those preserved, and they're wanting to put a mural on one of their buildings to honor that history. And so with that, I thank you for your support, and I'll take any questions you have.
Questions for Dustin or Dan?
None. Thanks. Thanks for doing a great job. The transition does seem to have been very smooth.
I appreciate the push-out and the worldview rethink as you progress through the economic, you mentioned it here, Dan, in the sense that now that we have gone in, the organization, the county has moved into the meetings and the private conversations such that they see you as a resource, they do the personal reach outs. Dustin, you know, you're new to it, but I'm sure you're getting it too. These people have been made aware that they are valued, that their success is our success, and we are doing everything on their behalf to not just move into the Ames and Big Nexus, but every corner of the county counts. Or as you go to these communities, you know what the stories you hear. I'm sure you could regale us for the things that you discuss. But that we have got to say that all hands on board. I think you would sit there and say, with the 15 communities we have in the county, I think they all would say that they feel part of a team now. That wasn't that long ago they did. So thank you.
Well, what's funny to remember is the skepticism that this was met with from some of our small towns. Dan, you and I went out to some of these small towns and talked to them about it, and it's gone from skepticism to complete reliance, where in many cases, Dustin is going to be the first phone call for some of these small towns when they're thinking of something. It is key, and it is completely based on the outstanding work of the ADC. I did want, there was an article, Dan, in the Des Moines Register a week or so ago on USDA, the possibility of a large USDA facility coming. I think we're one of, what, 15 or 20?
136.
Okay, 136 people who've been on it.
But we should be in the top 15.
since it was in register, I wanted to give you a chance to just address.
Sure. So the Secretary of Agriculture, Sonny Perdue, who's former governor of Georgia, long story, I'll make it short as possible. USDA has the National Institute of Food and Agriculture and the Economic Resource Service are both based in Washington, D.C. The thought of the Secretary and the President of the U.S. is that they can move some of those facilities out to where the constituents are. Well, they're both so closely tied to ag, obviously. Every land-grant school in the United States, like Iowa State or Kansas State, et cetera, is vying for this project. We submitted on behalf of one site in the Iowa State University Research Park about 3 weeks ago. There was a federal deadline. We submitted it through the Iowa Economic Development Authority. The Development Authority also had a site in Council Bluffs, in large part because they knew Omaha was going to be pitching, and the Omaha Council Bluffs MSA is one, and so Director Durham wanted a site in Council Bluffs as well. Following on, there was a few other sites across the central Iowa community that also submitted without the assistance of the Iowa Economic Development Authority. Now, I think the key takeaway from that is that there's a lot of competition. Politics will certainly be involved in this process. As you think about a federal facility being located somewhere, there's lots of reasons why Vice President Pence might want it near Purdue, or Secretary Sonny Perdue might want it in Athens at the University of Georgia, where he's from. And so the list goes on of all the host of reasons that it may go someplace else. We think the most logical place is here in Ames and Story County, given the significant USDA infrastructure we already have and the target market we have for agriculture here in the center of America. Having said all that, please don't take that to the bank. I wouldn't suggest that it's going to be here for certain, but we've got a really compelling case for why it should be here. One of the things that was in the Des Moines Register was that we did provide a $2,500 incentive to every employee who works at those USDA facilities today if they move to Ames or Story County. They move to Waukee, we'll think they're great too, but we're not going to incent them. And one of the big pieces of the big caveats of this proposal was we had to demonstrate workforce. We had to demonstrate that if this thing moved here, we could find people. Well, we leaned heavily upon Iowa State University because of the graduates that are coming out of primarily out of the College of Business through Statistics and Economics, and to the College of Agriculture for a whole host of the National Institute of Food and Agriculture. The Des Moines Register did the math for everybody and said, well, that's over $1.5 million that the Ames community, or the ADC is what they quoted, is going to have to give to all these people that relocate here. But keep in mind, please, that we would not have put that in there if we thought all 600 people, there's 600 jobs associated with this project. If all 600 were coming, we probably would have rethought that $2,500 kicker, if you will. It would go to the person. Because we can't incent the federal government, we tried to distinguish our proposal from everybody else. Now, is $2,500 a good enough reason to relocate your family to the middle of America? I don't know. But the sense is, if 100 people moved, that would be a huge stretch. And so we said, okay, we can raise that money. We can figure that out if we get to that point. And so someone said, well, does the ADC have $1.5 million to just put on the table tomorrow? And I said, no, we don't. But sometimes you have to take a little calculated risk, and that's what we did. We said, okay, if 100 people moved and we gave $2,500 a person, it's $250,000. We can probably figure that out. So cross your fingers. It'd be a great project. It's 2 4-story buildings sitting in the south side of the research park, but there's a long way to go before we cut any ribbons or break any ground on a project like this. But we are well-heeled and well-positioned for a project like this.
We're going to have to be at least one of the communities that they strongly commit.
I would hope so. Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right. Next item is consideration of proclamation of Domestic Violence Awareness Month. County Attorney Jessica Reynolds and Sheriff Paul Fitzgerald. Good morning.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Good morning. I'm Jessica Reynolds, Story County, and I'm proud to be joined today by Sheriff Paul Fitzgerald as we recognize that October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. Also present with us today, we've got Tess from Access. I saw Amasia. Hi, Amasia. And do you have anyone else from Access? Oh, hi. And thank you very much for being with us and joining us here today as well. Part of the ceremony here today is our board chair will be presenting access with donations that county employees have given to recognize the efforts that you make towards domestic violence crime victims. So thank you for the work that you do. As everyone can see, there are candles on the board's table. There are 304 candles on the table, and those represent the domestic violence homicide victims in Iowa. Each candle bears their name. Between 1995 and September of 2018, those are the 304 people in Iowa that have been killed by domestic violence-related homicides. 204 of them are female names, 41 are male names that are intimate partners in domestic violence homicides, and there are 59 bystanders represented in those candles. 32 are children under age 18. Obviously, in my work, I'm a prior domestic violence prosecutor, and I've seen the toll that domestic violence takes on communities and families. It's very serious. It's one of our most serious crimes that we prosecute. We all know in our line of work in law enforcement that domestic violence calls are some of the most dangerous calls that law enforcement responds to. There's a high level of violence that's involved, and if you look around the country, you'll see officers who have been shot responding to domestic violence calls. They're very serious. We also understand as a law enforcement community that the quicker we can intervene in domestic violence situations when they're brought to our attention, the less likely lethality is. And so as a law enforcement community in Story County, we're very collaborative in our efforts on domestic violence. We all believe that it's our job when we get a domestic assault to make sure that we're intervening at that stage. That may be the only chance that we get before this reaches a homicide level. And domestic violence cases are particularly difficult to prosecute for a couple of reasons. One is once you understand the cycle of violence, you understand why crime victims or victimized by their abusers don't want to come forward. There's a lot of reasons. Many of them are emotionally dependent on their abuser, financially dependent on their abuser. Many of them still love the person that is abusing them. Some people are concerned about the loss of their children in the relationship, should they leave the relationship. And so as prosecutors and law enforcement, we recognize that oftentimes we'll be taking these cases to trial without a victim testifying on our behalf, and that sometimes the victim may, in order to negotiate her safety, have to testify for the defendant. And so we use a proactive approach to these calls when we go on scene. We assume that we're not going to have a victim at trial, and so we collect other evidence via neighbors, physical evidence, photos of the home, and we make sure that we get DHS involved when children are present in the home so that they can do an investigation and assure safety of the children. This has been a really important collaboration at Story County. Through years of work, there's actually a domestic violence packet that our office and law enforcement has put together, and that is done on scene, and that collects additional information in these types of cases that we use when we prosecute. Iowa law has started to recognize the seriousness of domestic violence over the years, and now there are increased penalties when strangulation is involved in a domestic violence assault, and that's because we know statistically that when an intimate partner strangles their partner in a domestic assault, that the person being strangled is 7 times more likely to be murdered in the relationship. So as penalties have increased in that realm, that's been nice for us to see, and we hope that the legislature continues to recognize that. And on that note, we can move to the proclamation, unless you have any other comments.
I would just say, start out that one of the first committees I was appointed to when I became sheriff almost 27 years ago was the Attorney General of Iowa, the Crime Victim Assistance Board. And working on that board and being on the Supreme Court Domestic Violence Task Force and working with Jessica as we have, I certainly appreciate, and Story County should all appreciate the leadership that County Attorney Reynolds gives in many areas, but this is certainly one of them. So to start out, the proclamation of October as Domestic Violence Awareness Month in Story County. Whereas, home should be a place of warmth, unconditional love, tranquility, and security for most of us. Home, however, and family can be indeed counted among our greatest blessings. Tragically, for many Americans, these are blessings that are tarnished by violence and fear. And whereas, every 9 seconds, a woman in the United States is assaulted by an intimate partner, and whereas, an average of 3 women are murdered by intimate partners in the United States every day, and a person experiencing strangulation in a relationship is 7 times more likely to be murdered by their partner. And according to the American Psychological Association, the presence of a gun in domestic violence situations increases the risk of homicide by 500%. And
whereas, according to the Bureau of Justice Statistics Crime Data Brief, Intimate Partner Violence, women accounted for 85% of the victims of intimate partner violence, men for approximately 15%, and whereas women and men are not the only targets. Children, the elderly, family pets, and responding law enforcement officers are counted among the victims, and whereas, according to a study by Break the Silence, 2006, witnessing violence is the strongest risk factor in transmitting violent behavior from one generation to the next. And whereas, according to the National Resource Center on Domestic Violence, approximately 23% of LGBTQ men and 50% of LGBTQ women experience abuse at the hands of their intimate partners. And whereas, domestic violence costs an estimated $8.3 billion annually in medical care, mental health services, and lost productivity on the job. Women, men, and children living with domestic violence suffer higher rates of physical injuries, chronic health problems, depression, PTSD, attempted suicide, substance abuse, behavior problems for children, and homelessness. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Story County Board of Supervisors proclaim the month of October as Domestic Violence Awareness Month in Story County and urge our citizens to observe this month by becoming aware of the tragedy of domestic violence and supporting those who are working toward its end. Let's start with a motion to accept the proclamation.
Go ahead, Amy.
I would move that we accept this proclamation and pass it.
Second. We got a motion and a second. I just want to say, so I'm anybody who listens to me knows that I am a Story County fan. I think we live in a fantastic community. But don't mistake that feeling that we live in a fantastic community with the any belief that we don't have issues in our community. Domestic violence is clearly one of those major issues that we face here in Story County. But I'm so pleased that we face it with the two of you leading us and your staffs, along with the entire support system, including Access and all of our other agencies that try to provide the services necessary to break this cycle that we seem to be in. I just want to express on behalf of the board, I hope, our appreciation to you guys for the work that you do.
Thank you.
On our behalf and your staffs. Anything to add before we vote? Morris or Marty?
You took my breath away when I walked in and saw the candles here. You said it was 95. They go back to 95.
1995, yes.
So I believe a woman that I knew is up here. And I knew her husband who killed her in Cole County also. And so it's up to you.
Thanks, Morris. Anything further? All right, Olson.
Aye.
Chief.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month in Story County, Iowa. Now we're going to take a photo. I'm going to ask that everybody from the county's attorney's office, everybody here from Access, anybody who happens to be here from one of our other partner agencies, join us up here and take this photo. And I have a basket.
Grab the Access. I'm the green.
I'm the basket. Well, you need the basketball.
You need that. Stand right out of your way. All right, bye, smile.
Y'all set, Marla?
I brought my older camera because my good one was charging. So and I used to use this one for years, but I just don't trust it as much anymore. So let me try one more setting. Just to make sure we know what's in there.
Okay, we're going to hope we got it. Thank you very much. Thank you, guys. Absolutely.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes. Okay, there we are. Thank you. I explicitly asked you.
You're welcome.
Hey, Jeff, thank you.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
All right, next item is consideration of strategic plan for fiscal years 2019 through 2023.
Okay, sorry.
All right.
I'll sit over here.
Super.
In front of the mic. So,
start by introducing yourself.
Sure. My name is Clint Soloss. I'm from JO Consulting Group. We were hired to work with Story County here to do an update to the strategic plan, as you can see on the wall here. This has been a 4-month process, starting in mid-June and coming through today. I listened to the October 9th Board of Supervisors meeting, very substantive discussion and review of the current draft as it is. I thought you guys had a really good discussion about the back and forth on priorities and just going through that. Today, I didn't want to rehash that. I really just wanted to touch on the process, just kind of remind you as well as inform the public on what it is we did and how we got to where we are today. So basically, again, starting out in mid-June, we started out by collecting relevant studies. So we got the C2C plan, the CIP, department work plans, watershed management study that was recently completed. Had those retained as a reference for us as we started going forward with collecting input from staff. And so the first step beyond that was to create an internal survey to be used as a tool, not necessarily for statistical purposes, but as a tool for collecting feedback from various staff members. We were able to get feedback from 17 people on staff, primarily department heads and their other staff members. From there, we were able to put together a list of dozens of priorities of projects that they felt were important for the next 5-year plan. And from there, we were able to set up meetings with each one of you. You mentioned earlier an hour or more, usually an hour, maybe a little more on a few of them, with board supervisors as well as the directors for the internal and external operations. So we did 5 one-on-one interviews there to get some further context for the priorities as well as give you guys each an opportunity to give us your take on the next 5 years for Story County. From there, we were able to put together the findings into different categories. Of those kind of larger categories we started off with human resources, technology, regulations, facilities, services, water quality, parks and recs, and then we had a miscellaneous. Again, we started at that point when we got all the feedback, working with Leanne and some other staff members. We were able to kind of narrow those down a little bit to where we are today with our five goal categories. We created the priorities and then goals and action steps plan, similar to what you have, but you know, slightly different in that we had the four kind of our five main goals, a priority, and then an action step under each one. More or less, what we typically do for what we do as JDO for our strategic plans, just a little bit different, but very similar. Again, we worked back and forth with Leanne and her staff for about a six-week period, giving minor iterations, change back and forth. She's able to come to you on the 9th to do the discussion on priorities, a high, low, medium, high, as well as request any changes at that time. And then now we're at a point where Leanne has some comments received from staff to move forward with any other refinement of the plan.
Good. Questions about the process that we use for it?
I want to start by thanking Clint for helping us through this process. There's been a couple of delays as we worked through some items on our end to just get the wording that we felt was best to help Story County achieve success. What I'm going to present is an overview of the comments that were received. Shelley, I only have like 3 or 4 slides, but if you don't mind hitting the lights. And then I'll go over the draft plan with those changes identified. We did receive comments from Michael Cox, Story County Conservation, Stacey Herridge, our Story County Recorder, and then Jerry Moore with Planning and Development Department. I'm not going to ask you to read those because they're kind of smaller in font, but all these changes have been identified in the draft plan. So this is the level of response we received from Mike, and as we go through, I'll note where those changes are in the draft plan, too. Next, Stacey Herridge. I do want to share her comments. The internal challenges include are spot on, in my opinion. Objective 2 of county operations is imperative regarding a mission statement. While reviewing the proposed plan compared to previous plan for fiscal year 16 to 18, there is not a specific timeline that includes a start date and end date for each objective. Based on the priority given for each objective, should we add a timeline? I did have an opportunity to follow up with Stacey on this, and I said, yes, we discussed that, but the direction going forward at this point is to build that into work programs and get that level of detail, the devil in detail at that level, rather than the higher level strategic plan itself. And then her last point was to possibly add the strategic plan update to our quarterly department head meeting so we know where we are and where we are headed. The more we talk about it, the more it will become part of our discussions with our staff. Just an idea, and that is a fantastic idea. And I did thank Stacey for those comments. Last, Jerry Moore, and again, it's really difficult to read up there. Jerry did indicate thank you for the opportunity to review the plan. We organized our comments in 3 areas. 1, support the item. 2, we think our department could serve in a secondary role. And 3, we request additional information regarding our department. Department's role is, in some instances, appears to be a new function or role for our department. So I'll specifically hit on that last one as we go through the plan. Then Jerry, in addition, members of his staff did provide some feedback to the plan itself, and those changes are reflected. Grammatical or just rewording, those are reflected as possible changes for the board to consider. So with that, if you have a copy of the plan that was on today's agenda, I'll just go through quickly the proposed changes. On page 1, the second paragraph, it's a rewording. It apparently says the intent of the project or goals is to maintain and further enhance quality of life and economic vitality, strike service to, and replace with 4 Story County residents. The next page, page 2, again the second paragraph, where it's discussing the interviews, as Clint noted, with you all, just clarifying each long interview, adding with these individuals, just help clarify that. And then if you could please go to page 5, under quality of life. Mike Cox did add that we add recreational opportunities to the list of the quality of life assets.
He didn't feel that was covered under access to natural amenities.
I think he asked us to directly.
Okay.
Yeah.
My thought here a little bit is that this is a plan that's going to guide us for the next 4 to 5 years, and us may be somewhat fluid, I mean, as far as the board itself, but not the county, obviously. So I'm just kind of wondering about putting in recreational opportunities as a separate item that seems to be focused on one department when the rest of the sentence does not focus on one department. So that's my comment in there.
Yeah, and Morris, I appreciate that. Do you think adding, so I completely get where Mike's coming from, wanting this added, and it actually seems to kind of make some sense to me, but I like your thoughts on it. Do you think that this would create an undue burden or shift the plan in some way that would be problematic?
I think it's back to as staff work toward priorities, and I say staff and the collective,
right.
the entire county staff, is that if recreational opportunities is signaled out, that there might at some point it be interpreted as an undue emphasis on one particular area, as opposed to the rest of the statement says definitely access to natural amenities. There's what we do with our recreational opportunities. Diverse and engaged citizens, once again, they're covered under their strong economic foundation. That's something that can be applied a lot of different to, you know, different functions and different departments of the community and geographic proximity to other economic opportunities. So your question was, do I think it places an undue burden? I think is what you were asking. I'm just concerned that there would be an argument down the road that conservation and recreational opportunities might take precedent over some other areas based upon the plan.
I'm looking over your shoulder at a plan that we are looking to refresh.
Uh-huh.
2.5 years on the board, there has never been a redo for that, and that I'm was part of. And I guess we're worried about having to put a new refreshment of that plan in place, and I don't get why we get into the weeds on some of this verbiage.
Probably from my 20 years in different settings, why what
happened. We operate in a government sense, not a, I appreciate what you know, we all have a lot of different life experiences, but I think this is a government conversation.
Okay.
And I would like you to approach it as a government conversation. And once again, what we're talking about here, let's distill it down. We are talking about those three plaques over Lawrence's shoulders to do a redo. And that said, it's just like I'm not moved one way or the other on the verbiage that is being proposed, in the sense that it's just like I take Mike Cox as a an accomplished individual that is looking to improve a document, not to move it in a particular direction that serves on being a hit.
Okay. Given that attitude, Marty, I mean, you know, in your interpretation of that, I mean, I do not feel it's an undue burden to answer Rick's, you know, question there. I'm just concerned. And hearing what you're saying, that he's, you don't think that Mike is trying to target resources or emphasis of future projects his way. But I'm okay with leaving it then. I want to point it out.
I understand the way conservation works. They do a great job of leveraging outside dollars. When they do projects, they go outside in the granting process and private solicitation. They're not coming to us with an open hand on this one. I think they're just a purpose.
Well, I'll say two things about this. One, I think it is an important component that boards ought to consider. Two, I think it's while I think you're 100% correct, this would primarily speak to conservation. I think it speaks beyond conservation. In when we are doing a new road and Darren Moon is putting something in, we would strongly consider putting a trail off to the side, as we did going north to Gilbert, and I think this more speaks to that. As long as you're not concerned that it gets us off track of where you think our priorities are, I would suggest you go ahead and leave it as suggested.
That's fine.
Okay.
We can move on with that.
Super.
Thank you.
Next page is actually the handout I just gave you all. This was something that Mike had emailed back. It's under the second, under the policy and regulations. And note that the spelling error you all have on your copy for continue is not what's actually in there. It's the statement would read, Story County will continue that practice to continue to address valid concerns as they arise. Rather than, there's two continues. Again, this is, I've taken as suggested. Options, Story County will continue that practice to address valid concerns as they arise. Remove a second continue, but that is what was requested as well. Going to the next page, page 8. We're now actually into the projects themselves, or the objectives and the action steps themselves. Under objective 1, add increase community engagement and expand. Under step 1, under objective 1, at the end of that statement for regarding Story County programs and offerings. Under objective 2, add planning and development as an office or department. Any questions on page 8? On to page 9. I'm going to start by adding on step number 4, adding conservation to assessing the connectivity needs throughout Story County. And then revisiting Jerry's concerns and comments. He did identify for steps 2, 4, and 5, this would be a new role for the Planning and Development Department, so they would need some additional information as they go forward, and these items are built into work programs and so forth. But that would be for steps 2, 4, and 5. Any questions on page 9?
Going well, we on. Did, so 2, 4, and 5 we did as a pilot project. At one point, this has been a few years ago, but it has not been something that we've gone beyond that pilot project. Is that right?
They've been under, yes and no. It's not been under the Planning and Development Department. They've been projects with which I've been involved under the board as I transitioned under the Board of Supervisors.
Okay.
I still, number 4, the connectivity, I still have the Connect Iowa on my work program and do different aspects of that as I go forward. So it would be some shifting of either growing different programs or shifting responsibilities.
But by having 2, 4, and 5 in there, we aren't necessarily saying this is planning and development responsibility. Yeah. We're just listing them as a potential partner in this ongoing responsibility.
Right.
And just so that maybe in number 4 to clarify, we're talking here about broadband connectivity.
Right.
Could it not also apply to the trails, like connectivity, or are we going to just use it as strictly in this particular item, broadband?
This is strictly broadband.
Okay. So maybe let's just add broadband connectivity.
Yeah, I think that works.
Okay. Then the next page is page 13. Step number 2.
Can we go back to page 10?
What page?
10.
Yep.
Okay. Under objective 1, which is the succession plans, and I talked about this when we last discussed. And when we went through it in the ratings about the succession plans and my concern just that, you know, we make it very clear that just because we've offered training to allow someone to expand their skills and because we've set a goal to establish succession plans, that does not mean that employees automatically will be the people who would fill these leadership roles in the future. So I'm just asking you guys if we should include a clause to establish succession plans, comma, as incorporate or as including external and internal candidates comma, to ensure, or whether you feel it's clear enough here.
Yeah, I feel it's clear enough here. I think the point you make is a great point. I don't think there's anything in here that implies in any way that somebody's just automatically going to get a position. Without anything added. Marty, you feel differently than that?
Perfect work that we can do. You know, I'm both putting anything in that finds a future report in the sense that I think we have the latitude in a plainly stated manner that says whoever sets up here gets it.
Yep.
Okay, I just wondered, one more time, one more little piece of body.
I get where you're going, but I think we have the latitude to do it, and once again, I'm not trying to shake us into a corner where we don't leave. Some previous board says, well, they said this, and you know, if you're reading it and being adherent to what's written there, I guess, does this say we can't do that?
Okay.
I don't want to turn that wish into a future conversation where our board doesn't feel the ability to act in a way it feels best.
Okay. All right, thank you. I'm sorry, Ian. Now we're back to 15.
13. Step two, you see actually two lines. The one in red is the one that is proposed to replace the one above that. Continue to research and seek a variety of funding sources, including contracts, gifts, and grants, and other outside resources to leverage Story County conservation funds, rather than the original language.
I take the first hand just to make it clear. But either way,
it's good. Gifts, grants, and other outside resources.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fine. Next is page 16. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Page 14 is just under step number one, assess needs, rather than just assess need. And that's under objective three. Then page 16. Under objective two, after technology needs, adding the word assessments, and then striking the E of 911. Page 17, some rewriting rather than establish cost estimates, just write estimate costs.
Yep.
And then page 18, objective one, adding to the objective stormwater and wastewater management, prior to wastewater management. And then rewriting step number one as proposed in red, which would be develop, implement, and monitor strategies and partnerships to build upon the countywide watershed assessments, and adding planning and development. And then under objective two, step one, rather than related to, replace with including.
I heavily agree through there. I did have one possible addition for back to 13. Step one, objective one is continue to enhance park facilities throughout Story County. And step one is review and prioritize capital improvement plans. Project outlined in the Story County Conservation Board's current strategic plan report. We have the department doing it in its entirety in conservation. And may everyone reading that feel that the Board of Supervisors at some point also would weigh in on that, given priorities that might be on the board's list that are not on conservation's list, or the other way around, that possibly the board might reorder those.
Well, yeah, but so conservation is their own entity, and they get to have their own strategic plan and their own capital improvements plan. Now, we're the budgetary entity, so the fact that they have it doesn't bind us to doing it. And if it goes from conservation to us, it goes through our process, which is our own capital improvement plan. So I actually felt more secure since it was just conservation than if they were putting the Board of Supervisors in there and trying to tie us to it.
I referenced this a little bit in the very end of our meeting with the neighbors, which, of course, was just a broad agenda type thing. And there was a comment made about wanting a trail in the New Story City, and my comment was about, geez, McCallsburg is still waiting for their trail to be paved. And so that's where I went through this again over the weekend to reread this and think about where is our input here as the Board of Supervisors when we're hearing from constituents that they feel they've been they've been made a promise, or maybe it's just their expectations, and there isn't a promise out there, but that they've been moved down the priority list. That's my question.
I would come at this in the sense that the previous board assigned that money to conservation. And if you park that in January, one of the things that we expressed in the National Park Whole Road is some of those problems with these possibly cabins. And you see cabins that they took it out and you'll see construction not going forward. We have the ability to indirectly or tangibly move this board, but then again, they work in a process held by themselves. And we are funders, we get the ultimate say.
Right, and that's where I'm headed. Exactly, Marty. You and I are seeing this the same way. We're the ones who control the money, if you will. Okay? And we've given them that particular money on the DAPL, the DAPL payouts, you know, for them to use as they want. But does that exclude us, and I'm not talking about the DAPL money, I'm talking about general money we give, does that exclude us from saying on their plan, look, you've just added three new segments to be paid that have never been discussed before, and meanwhile you have residents out there who have at least an expectation to determine, you know, that their segments are getting paid. And so that's where do we come in as the funders, the ultimate controllers of the dollars here?
At budget time.
Okay, so maybe that's here is fine.
No, absolutely. I mean, that's their responsibility. It's okay. Their purview to do their own strategic plan, to have their own priority list, but then they come and they sit before the board when it's budget
right.
time and say, hey, here's what we want to do. And we say, well, either okay, or we don't have the money, or we got another problem. The cabin is a great example. The cabin wasn't anywhere on their priority list until we started pushing it. Right? And so I don't want us as a board of supervisors to try to insert ourselves on another board's purview. And as I see it, the conservation strategic plan is conservation board's purview. They just don't have to come to the board of supervisors to get the funding to implement.
Then who is held responsible if McCallsburg feels very strongly, or any entity, sorry, I don't want to pick on McCallsburg, okay? I just have to, they brought this issue to me.
Sure.
They'll be going back to next month. So any community who feels they come to the supervisors, because we are the money people, and there is this other board out there who has some autonomy. So where does the autonomy rest? I mean, where does the final decision really rest?
Can board supervisors.
With us to say, okay, we really want you to do this project. You've asked for $2.5 million, but we're telling you we want $600,000 of it to go toward the paving of so many of a segment for the McCallsburg Trail. So you feel that's a comfort level for us. It's not.
Oh, no. Well, I didn't say comfort level because Story County is one of the few counties anywhere that has a really positive give-and-take working relationship with specifically its conservation board. What I'm telling you is that we as a board of supervisors do not have we don't appropriately have the authority to tell them what their goals or priorities are. We just have the ability to fund or not fund. Plain and simple. And at the end of the day, if a board of supervisors decides that it's paving the trail in McCallsburg, the trail in McCallsburg is going to get paved.
But it may not be a conservation.
But conservation may not be happy with that.
I would point to Jordan Acres as being, I think we got a $75,000 ask through that grant when that acquisition process just came fully online this fall. And our exposure by when it was all said and done was how much?
It was an $850,000 project, and we ended up putting $10,000 general fund dollars.
But I believe in the budgeting process, they came to us for a much higher number, knowing that we had little monies, or the fact that we tasked them with finding the additional difference, because we didn't want to necessarily appropriate it. They did. I think that was a conversation that is fluid in a sense. They have their wishes and wants. The community's like Cox, you know, you see him, I don't know how many meetings I've done, is there anything I want to talk about? The paving of the Prairie Trail up north. You go into a conversation in Colo, they want to talk about instituting a bike trail between Colo and Hickory Grove. these conversations happen in a departmental sense with communities. We get made aware of it because of thinking of somebody who might outreach it to us as a supervisor. Yet, once again, I think that they do things on a strategic level that we may or may not know the particulars. For instance, our representative there, I'll turn to him if there's anything in regards to anybody can ask for anything, they do it.
Well, that's something I want to determine in November, and please, I see our legal counsel out there, and let us know if we've gotten too far away from the discussion here on the agenda item. But in that particular situation, they have they seem to believe that it was going to happen. So I would need to clarify with him this: what exactly were your expectations? And if that, Mike, I'm planning on inviting you to see if you want to come along. Okay. So, but my question is broader about if we want something done, we feel that it's in the best interest of the county due to the transportation plan, something that we feel is a higher priority than is on the list and with conservation. All right. Then if we say we're going to put money toward this, Rick, are you saying we're putting money in this? We've got a conservation board sitting in front of us, and we say we're going to put X number of dollars into this for this purpose. It happens to fall under your board, so you're going to be responsible for executing it. Is that the level you're looking at there? See, that's where I see the difference.
No, I think that is, well, I don't think there is a disconnect. I think it's a question of, are we going to try to mandate that a separate board operate the way we want a separate board to operate, which I think is inappropriate. I think many board supervisors try to do exactly that with their conservation board. What we've done a good job, and this is long before me, what we've done a good job of here in Story County is finding a way to work collaboratively and finding a way to come together. All I'm telling you is statutorily, the Board of Supervisors is the funding authority. And so at the end of the day, if the Board of Supervisors were to say, we want a trail between McCallsburg and Zero, first thing I'd say to the Board of Supervisors is, okay, give me the metrics on that. Why are you spending dollars for that trail that gets 10 users a day and you're not using your dollars on the trail that's getting 100 users a day? That'd be the first thing I'd ask. But let's say the board decided that, by golly, we're paving a trail from McCallsburg to Zero. Either conservation would say, absolutely, we control the Prairie Route Trail, let's pave it, or the Board of Supervisors can always go in and do exactly what we did in Gilbert and pave our own trail. The board has the ability, we are the elected statutory responsibility to make decisions like that, but any board that's foolish enough, this is my personal editorializing here, any Board of Supervisors that's foolish enough to think that they know better, exclusive of the opinion of one of their other boards and commissions. I'm not saying we can't have disagreements, but just automatically thinks they know better, I think you're making a big mistake.
Well, I agree with you that automatically thinks anyway, but I think you just connected the dots for me.
Okay.
We could go in and see the life that Gary wrote and accomplish it ourselves without interfering with your theory. In that case, thank you for the time you've given us for this discussion, and I withdraw the suggestion for the supervisors to insert it there now that I've clarified where we still have it. Thank you.
So the next steps, I'll finalize based on today's action. I'll work with Flynn to get the final changes completed and have a copy that we can release for the public on our website, share with all of the elected officials and department heads, work with Deb Childress to get, if you agree with Stacy's recommendation, get an item, kind of standing item on the quarterly department head elected officials meetings, do a press release, too, that we as an entity have adopted this, and then lastly, tackle the posters on the wall. And unfortunately, I think that lies with me, not you. So
I can assist.
Okay, thank you. With that, are there any questions?
No. Appreciate the opportunity to go through this. Had a very good conversation in my hour, and I'm glad to see what came out of it.
Yeah.
And brings it back to us, as we have just done, you know, this is sausage making. This is how we get to where we say this is what we want to do. I'm sure other boards in future times will have this conversation in 5 years or sooner. But this is what I got to with during this time.
Yeah, thank you. I'm really impressed with the process And thank you to the staff, because I know they carry the heavy load on this, you know, in your guys' organizations. So thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much. I also want to say thank you guys for your time and effort as well. Leanne's been a great partner and a great collaborator on this as well. So I wanted to start with the thank you.
Super. Take a motion to approve.
I would move consideration of our student plan fiscal years 19 through 23 as presented.
I second.
Motion and a second. Just noting that there's a couple of minor, I want to call them scripter changes, as noted in our conversation. So with that caveat, any further conversation?
None.
Chief?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Thank you. All right. Next is consideration of minutes for October 9th, October 16th, and October 23rd.
I would move as they are now presented with the one small word change.
Yeah, so there was a word change of Supervisor Olson read a statement to Supervisor Olson made a statement.
Correct. That's it.
Second.
Motion and a second. Olson.
Aye.
Chief.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. No personnel actions. Claims for November 1st.
I will
second that.
Motion and a second. Chief.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Consent agenda board.
So we move as presented.
Second.
Olson.
Aye.
Chief. Sanders. Aye. No public hearing items, no additional items, no agency reports. Departmental report, we get to hear from Carla Webb in Community Services today.
Good morning, Carla.
Hi, Carla.
Good morning. Good morning. Okay, so today I'm talking about our quarterly report from July to September 2018. We always start off talking about our general assistance program. For single households assisted, we had 16, and for family households, 15 of those, for a total of 31 for July through September. For notices of decision where we were unable to assist an individual and referred them to other organizations, we had 280 of those applicants. We had 25 individuals who applied but did not return to our office. For dollars expended, we provided $10,381 in rent, $738.74 in utilities, and then other items. The bulk of this is going to be burial with a little bit of transportation, I believe, is $2,089. We don't currently have anybody in the SSI interim program. For substance use services, we provided payment on three different committal charges there. In regards to the CICS region, we are a collaborating member on the Children's Wellbeing Collaborative Grant that YSS has. I sit on the steering committee as a representative of CICS. This is a new grant that YSS secured. I believe it starts 10-1 and runs through the end of June. It's covering all of the CICS region. Before, I believe there was about 5 or 6 counties included in it in our region. Now it covers all 11 counties. The grant is focusing on prevention and early intervention services, including mental health crisis services, to support the well-being of children ages 0 to 12 and their families.
So that's an expansion on the ages, right?
Correct, yeah. Good. Yeah, I believe before it was up to age 8, mm-hmm. and so now we're up to age 12. So we had our first larger stakeholder meeting a couple weeks back. I think we had good representation there. Individuals from all 11 counties throughout our region were in attendance. We'll have 2 more stakeholder meetings between now and the end of the grant. Greene County became official as of July 1. We've had staff going to that county working to just bring them on board. We've got a service coordinator there, Ellen Ritter. She was previously with Greene County, so she's very familiar with everything over there. And then Patty Tribal Lees is overseeing county, and then our coordination officer is Betsy Sturzma, that's working there too. During the quarter, as I believe it was last week, we were here and talked with you about the request we received from Cerro Gordo County. So the administrative team did do background work on that for the request of our governing board. We collected a lot of information. At our governing board meeting last week, the board did approve to accept Cerro Gordo's request to withdraw their letter of intent to join our region. During the quarter, the governing board did renew a consultant agreement with Karen Walters Crayman. So this is the second agreement with her now. So this one runs from September through December 31st. Areas of focus that Karen is assisting us with is looking into value-based purchasing in long-term services and supports, identifying value-based purchasing projects, pilot projects, and looking at potential braided funding models, data collection and connectivity, legislative proposals, and ways regional dollars could potentially draw down Medicaid funds. We are also in conversation with other regions who are interested in joining this partnership. So I believe we have one region that's signing the MOU and a couple other ones that we're taking it back to their local boards and that. So. We reissued a RFP for drop-in centers and drop-in center services in Warren County. We participated in the Mental Health Expo held in Story County in September. Approximately, there were about 55 professionals that participated in the Lunch and Learn and an estimated 450 individuals that attended the evening event with Joan Becker. And we had 28 vendor booths that night at the events as well, sharing information on mental health and disability.
It was a really, really good event.
It really was, yes. See, we completed a contract amendment with NAMI Central Iowa for funding of two additional crisis intervention trainings for law enforcement. The next one will be coming up here next week. And I believe they still have some openings, so we're still, I sent the information out to our local law enforcement agencies again last week, letting them know about those available spots. So hopefully we'll get that filled up. We do have quite a few coming from Story County already. The next training, so yep, that training's in November. The other thing that we did was we completed a contract amendment with Mary Greeley Medical Center for medication prescribing and management onboarding and access with the hire of a new psychiatrist, Dr. Chetlani, and she is currently overseeing the crisis stabilization transitional living center services as well as working on the behavioral health inpatient unit. In regards to community services, we had three staff participate in the CoopCog training that was held this past quarter. Our office continues to be involved with the Opioid Task Force and the Nevada Substance Use Task Force. I failed to mention in here there was a community conversation event that the Opioid Task Force sponsored that took place in September with Peter Komodowski presenting. The next event is coming up in November, and we will have families who have been affected from the opioid epidemic share their stories. We continue to have staff involved with the Two Rivers Regional Committee regarding coordinated entry for shelter care, and we also have staff that are meeting with local agencies exploring a homeless prevention central intake concept. A Lunch and Learn was held in September with local homeless prevention agencies and stakeholders to discuss this concept and explore interest with anticipated collaboration continuing. This quarter, Aaron Rewertz, our CVSO, completed 107 interviews with veterans or their surviving spouses.
Carla, going back here to the Two Rivers Regional Committee, do you know if Kathy Johnson or someone else will be able to attend on Thursday?
Kathy is not able to attend, and I don't think we have anybody else going from our office. With us being down a staff member right now, our service coordinators are picking up.
I normally attend and then pass on or a heads up, you know, if there's something going on, but I don't believe I'll be here because I'm going to take it. So, and they're going to be discussing a couple of concepts. So maybe Kathy must have checked in late.
Yep. Okay, good. You bet. Thank you.
Good. Could you speak a little bit about the stepping up forum that we attended last week?
You bet, yeah. So last week there was a statewide stepping up summit that was held, sponsored by ISAC. And then they also had an individual from NACO that her primary focus is working on the stepping up initiative. So from Story County, Marty, myself, Micah Anderson, Assistant Jail Administrator, and then Tyler Lennon, Service Coordinator with our office, attended. We sat at a table with the Johnson County Sheriff and a jail alternative staff member. I think it was a great opportunity for us to kind of come back together, talk about ideas on next steps for us. We came up with some tasks that we're going to follow up on to try and move our the work that we're doing in reducing the number of individualized or number of individuals in our county jails with mental illness. So we've got some specific tasks that we're going to be looking at. One of the things that we talked about was looking into peer support services. If I think there was a lot of discussion just around the room at trying to get those services connected, either in the jails or as people are leaving jail, and getting them connected with a peer who has lived experience. I thought it was a great event. Came away with some great ideas.
We will probably be contacting other organizations and that individual that was the speaker too in regards to the peer component, which he had a very compelling story of his life story, how he was brought into drug use, you know, and physical abuse, and he really got to it. He was in the down and dirty mode, and it really spoke to a lot of people, and I would have to say we took his business card. I expect to be quite positive to bring that back here in regards to this might be something we want to try to implement in Story County. Really, there, tangible takeaway too is Dave Wilson.
That's
it.
Okay.
Carla,
thank you.
Thank you,
guys. Have a good day.
You too.
Absolutely. Liaison side of the show. I guess we're going to do public forum two again. Other reports first. There aren't any. Public forum number two. This is an opportunity for members of the public to comment on items, really anything you want to comment on. Anybody wishing to do so, come on up to the microphone. Shocked that nobody came up to the microphone. So we'll move on to liaison assignments. Marty.
Big Mel Health Week again. Carla made mention of the fact that we had a stepping up form down in Des Moines, and don't need to really go over what we did, but I think you'll see things that will fall out of that. It was our second year of attending. We also had a great week last week. We opened the Crisis Stabilization Center, Big Rock, and thank you for all the partners that are joining us in doing that. We had a great CICS meeting in Thursday here, and we did formally disavow the pass out of Cheryl Porno. And I think that is, as I was approached on Friday at a meeting up in Eldora, Central Iowa Juvenile Justice, that there are other regions or other counties that are looking possibly, I don't know, if they could form an alliance, or that they may, as I looked at them, they'd be ready if they form their own region. Because we are kind of where we are, we have such a large geographical footprint that we make some of our partners uncomfortable. We're fortunate being right here in the middle, but let us not mess up a very good thing. So that was all the advice I gave them. And tonight, with all our trick-or-treaters, everybody be careful about it.
You got trick-or-treaters tonight in Nevada, huh?
Not out where I live.
Who are you?
If they're out there, then I'm taking pictures.
Everybody's wrap-up tonight.
Tonight is downtown.
Is downtown. Okay.
That's why my good camera is charging.
Oh, get ready. No, but maybe
those kids are important.
Actually, you have a lot of municipalities tonight, and so.
Good. Anything else?
Nothing.
Good. Laura.
Community and Family Resources, Matt. I think some key things out of that meeting. First of all, that the agency is going to hire two more community peer support people, increasing from one to three, so keeping on that theme. We also have signed a contract with a provider out of Des Moines to offer medication-based abuse, substance abuse, opioid treatment. The primary health care provider that has been coming up here to Story County is now full. They can only treat so many people under their license at one time. So that's taken care of. It was nice to see Webster County back at the table. It sounds like that disagreement has been settled. And so now the accounting has to go forward, et cetera. So that's not a problem there. And I was reelected as treasurer, which is on the executive committee, but fortunately I don't have a lot to do on a regular basis. So I would say that was one of the things. The other thing I'd like to talk about, a meeting I went to that I did not represent Story County at, I went as an individual, but it was the annual Humane Society of the United States. The Iowa chapter has a pre-legislative review for the Iowa legislature, and the discussion of our new chapter 45 came up, and they were interested in it. So I see Ethan out there, so I thought I'd let Ethan know, and Deb worked on it, and obviously, Sue McCaskey is not here, but there's some interest from other people in Iowa on that. And I'll let that go.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. If there's nothing else from us, for us, Ethan, come on up and talk to us about potentially going into closed session. Morning, Ethan.
Hi.
Morning. I had a request that we go into closed session pursuant to Iowa Code 21.51C to discuss matters that are presently in litigation and strategy of those matters with counsel where public disclosure would disadvantage or prejudice the government body.
Well, then I would move that we adjourn, so May 10th, closed session.
I second.
Yeah, so we'll go, just to clarify, we'll take a 5-minute recess. We'll reconvene in closed session in the board's conference room. Once the closed session is done, we'll come back out here, report out whatever might need to be reported out from the closed session, and then conclude our meeting. So that's the process we're going to take. You're good with that? Is that motion? You second that?
Second.
Chitty?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. So 5-minute recess, and then we'll reconvene in closed session. Anybody who chooses? Good?
All right,
so it is just afternoon, and we're coming back from closed session, so we're reconvening in open session. Civil Attorney Ethan Anderson set the record for us as we come out of closed session.
Yes, the board can't take action in closed session, so the only action that can be taken today is the county attorney's office will brief next week's agenda to bring the discussion forward for the public hearing, for open session.
So there'll be an item, based on our conversation in closed session today, there will be an item of consideration for the board on next week's agenda for us to discuss and take action on.
That's correct.
Any further questions, board?
None.
If there's none, I'd take a motion to adjourn.
Moved.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
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 We're adjourned.
Thank you.
Good job.
Signatures. Do you have a